Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, 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 everybody, to Drive Through HR. It is Tuesday, February 4th, and I am your host, Robin Schooling, on today's episode of Drive Through HR, and very much looking forward to our guest today and a conversation that we're going to have. This is going to get us right down to the, you know, dare I say it, the core, one of the core fundamental things of HR. You know, sometimes we talk about technology and we go off on these tangents and we're talking about, you know, the latest and greatest buzzwords or hype, but at its base, this is a show about human resources, and it always gives me kind of a nerdy thrill when I get to talk about sort of these legal foundational aspects of what we do. So our guest today is one of my favorite people and one of my favorite employment attorneys. Two words that you don't often hear, two phrases you don't often hear put together, but I have no problem saying it. And that is Kate Bischoff. Welcome, Kate.
Thank you so much for having me, Robin. I'm so happy to be here.
I know.
You're absolutely right. This is a super core issue, and it's one of my favorites, so I'm happy to talk about it.
We'll just nerd out on this, you know, kind of legal stuff here for the next 30 minutes. So for our listeners who are not familiar with you, why don't you introduce yourself? Tell folks a little bit about what you do and how you spend your time.
Okay, so I suffer from law degree, as should have been readily apparent in the last 2 minutes. But I am an employment lawyer who no longer litigates. So I spend about a third of my time doing trainings in workplaces, from respectful workplace training, manager training, FMLA 80-type training. Another third of what I do is policy work, so developing handbooks and practices and procedures within HR. And as my kids like to call it, the random, oh, shit, Kate, can I fire this guy question that happens about once or twice a week. And then the last third is this topic. It's workplace investigation. So a client will call and say, Kate, we have an allegation of XYZ. Can you come in and figure out if that's what happened and then make recommendations as to what the outcome should be? So it's kind of these three different buckets kind of feed each other and provide good fodder and help me do better in my work and so that I can do better with my clients.
Yeah. So. Well, and let me add to that as well, because obviously you do the work and you support, you know, folks who are clients. But I think one of the differentiators for you and there's a handful of other employment attorneys that I also think very fondly of, because the vein that runs through, I think, a lot of the work that you do and some of these other folks is your education to the greater community. Writing your blog posts, doing webinars, being out on Twitter, LinkedIn, and really kind of taking these sorts of issues, boiling them down to the here's why it's important, you need to know about it, and being able to weave the story that gives understanding to HR professionals or to business leaders. And you're excellent at that. You really are.
Thank you. Thank you. I really appreciate it. I love doing them. I love doing the webinars. I love I'm a big fan of the Twitter. But I enjoy having these conversations about this stuff because I think it's important because sometimes it can be really hard to keep up with what's happening in employment law, to keep on top of all of this. And so as much as myself and my employment law friends like John Hyman and Dan Schwartz and Mark, as much as we can put it out there in the world, I think we're doing better for HR, and that means that eventually you guys will come pay us. So, right, that's the hope, at least.
Exactly. So the topic we want to talk about today, and you know, really, really front of mind. You wrote a post about it end of last week, actually, about a recent decision made by the National Labor Relations Board. And I saw it had a catchy name, and now I can't think of what it was being called. Or did I dream that?
The the name of the decision?
Yeah.
It
had some kind of nickname, I thought, but.
The decision itself is Apogee Unique Thrift Store, Apogee LLC Unique Thrift Store. It's a decision before the board, so it doesn't really have, like, the fancy legal names that we come up with where it's, like, Smith versus ABC Holding Company or something like that. Usually these kinds of cases come up with kind of just a one name, like, this is the case. So and this particular decision came down in December, kind of mid-December timeframe, and it overturned a relatively infamous decision called Banner Estrella Medical Center, and commonly referred to by investigators by the Banner decision.
Yeah.
So the Banner was prefaced on this idea that employees get to talk to each other about investigations, get to talk about misconduct. And this new decision kind of overturns part of that decision, saying that employees can be told that they can't talk about an investigation. And so it was heralded by a lot of investigators out there, by law firms out there. And I might be the lone dissenter, but I'd like to talk about why I dissent. So.
So I'm going to back up a minute, and this doesn't really necessarily have to do with investigations, but this is a question, you know, that especially new HR professionals, heck, even some very, very senior HR professionals, seem to latch onto, and that is, oh, well, that's the National Labor Relations Board, and we're not union, so I don't have to pay attention. And...
Yes.
You know, I mean, I hear that all the time, and it's like, no, you do. Doesn't matter if you have a CBA or not. So it is important for folks to, first of all, be aware of this. So let's go through a scenario. So employer is investigating whatever. Let's pick harassment, you know, because that's, I think, where we're going to lead to, because that's where you've kind of mapped out some of your thoughts on it. So here's an investigation into potential sexual harassment at an organization.
Mm-hmm.
And what does this new decision now tell the investigator or the HR leader, the HR business partner, whoever's investigating it? What do they have to do or not do?
Well, there's nothing that they have to do. There is this knee-jerk reaction in investigations that we want to kind of put a status quo and try to figure out what the landscape of the situation is right now without any kind of external interference. Ideally, in a lot of investigators' minds, that means if everybody just stopped where they are, and we could walk up to each one of them where they are and ask them the questions and get all the information from them. At that, right at this point, then we will know what happened. And that's not how real life works, right? I mean, when you hear there's an allegation of harassment and you get that allegation on Friday night, there's no way you can interview employees over the weekend. And so they're bombarded by, you know, their friends' Facebook posts and social media and the going to go see maybe the Bombshell movie or something like that over the weekend. And so that when you sit down to talk to them and ask them what happened, there's all of this other stuff that might have gone through. And it's possible that when you get the report of harassment, you're like the seventh person to find out about it. And so people have been talking about it for a bit. And so there's no good way to put that stop mechanism up there. And what HR historically has done prior to this Banner decision, because the Banner decision is still relatively new, it's from 2015, what Banner tried to do is say, you can't stop people from talking. You can't tell line level employees that they can't talk about this. And so there was this way that employees were talking to each other. And when they talked to each other, you got more information. They said, you know, maybe you should go talk to the investigator too, or, you know,
yeah,
you know, you really should do the right thing and not be quiet in the investigation. And so Banner recognized that in the National Labor Relations Act, and in particular, it's called Section 7, and this is where even non-union employers need to know about it, is that we cannot stop employees from engaging in what's called concerted protected activity. That means employees talking to each other to improve the terms and conditions of employment. And obviously, an investigation is a term or condition of employment because it results in discipline, it results in change of management, it results in the whole host of things that could come out of an investigation. So Banner granted under an Obama National Labor Relations Board, because the other key thing people should take away is the NLRB is incredibly political. Every time we get a new president, we swing this pendulum back and forth. It is perhaps the most political of the employment agencies that we work with. And so this is a major swing off an Obama decision. And that's what Banner said, is these folks get to talk. This NLRB, a Trump-appointed NLRB, finds very differently and says, maybe you don't necessarily need a blanket policy, but you can tell people they can't talk because we want this stop mechanism to try to get what happened at that point in time without any external interference. And so that's my reading of this case, Unique Threats, is that that's what it's trying to get at. I'm just like you, Robin, I get to live in a real world. And when I'm investigating, I get tons of different information coming from people. I get the jittery, nervous person sitting across from me who obviously has more things to say, because I know he or she has more things to say because people have told me they do, but they're just not saying it. And so the idea to them that this is, I'm going to tell them don't talk about it or anything like that, that is a statement I don't want to make, because I know when you're sitting in the chair and you're nervous, you want to tell me stuff, and it may be that you talk to another coworker who says, well, I told her blah, 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 and you're like, maybe I should go back and talk to her too. So,
And I've certainly had, you know, I think back of the number of investigations that I've done over the years, and, you know, part of that, okay, I'm talking to Sally Sue, who was maybe one of the witnesses, and, you know, and one of my questions is, you know, was anyone else there? Are there any other witnesses you can tell me about? You know, are you aware of anybody else that, you know, was brought into this situation or whatever? And Sally Sue, there's one of the times when Sally Sue, because she doesn't want to get, you know, anybody involved, doesn't say anything. But then she goes back and she's thinking about it, or she goes back and talks to her coworker and says, oh, yeah, I didn't give him your name, but, you know, I know you saw it too, or you've heard this, or you witnessed X. And ultimately then that person comes walking in, you know, and we'll be missing that. We'll be eliminating the ability for people to have multiple ways to bring forth information or to be involved in the investigation, to, you know, which is ultimately about getting at the truth.
Right. And I don't say the people who think this new decision is great are not trying to get to the truth. They absolutely are trying to get the truth.
Yeah.
I just think they're potentially closing off a bunch of different ways that they could get it if they seize on to this decision. The other piece of it for me is that when I'm meeting with someone, an employee comes in to meet with me as an investigator. They're nervous, they're anxious, they're definitely not happy to be there in most cases. And so when I ride the line of what this new case allows me to say is that the content in my questions need to remain confidential. The person who's sitting across from me doesn't hear the nuance between content and question. They hear this investigation is confidential. And the power I have as the investigator is very threatening, right? Because what happens out of my investigation results in some discipline in many cases, not all, but in many cases. And so they're afraid coming to me in the first place. And so they don't hear the nuance if I say content and questions. And then they're afraid that if they do talk about it, I'm going to get them fired. And so whether I make it as a threat or I make it as an admonishment, when I what I say in the investigation carries weight, and that power is something that could really silence and, as you mentioned, stop those different avenues of getting information.
Right, right. Now, one of the pieces I read, and I believe this is correct, with this new decision that the framing of it is that that time for confidentiality where you can say don't talk about this is during the open investigation. So I do the investigation, you know, the company does the investigation, we close it out, we make our decisions, whatever happens happens, terminations, you know, warnings, nothing, whatever. Once that's closed, although how would anybody know that, but that could be 6 months or a month from now, then Sally Sue could be talking about it. Or,
right.
And I guess that's where it becomes, to me, potentially long-term, there's potential long-term damage for the organization. You know, and again, people never know, theoretically, nobody knows what happens with an employment, you know, decision whether that be a suspension or whatever, any kind of discipline thing other than the people involved. But people will think nothing happened, even more so potentially now. Boy, we couldn't even talk about this. Gee, it's been 6 months, and Bob is still here. Yeah. We don't know what they did to Bob, if anything. Bob is still here.
Mm-hmm.
He's still doing this. But I've been told I can't talk to anybody about it.
Right. And
is
does that mean that HR is going to frighten?
I
definitely think that will frighten people. And it also puts the burden on HR. Like, okay, so you can't talk about while the investigation is open. But now that we're done with Bob and he's still here and everything seems to be going fine, we're going to tell everybody that the investigation is over? No.
Right.
We don't do that. Why? Because that would, you know, even if we're still monitoring Bob's behavior, that we, you know, we suspended him, we took his bonus away, whatever we did to try to make sure that behavior didn't continue, we thought it was going to be effective, but we're still monitoring the shit out of Bob, right? We're not letting him run on a leash, but people are thinking that we are. And if we said, investigation's closed, please resume talking about Bob's conduct, like, they're going to think we're going to be awful. We're going to look like we are incompetent and we didn't actually take the steps. And so that's the other piece of this that is frustrating to me.
Yeah. Let me do a
and
quick
I'm sorry
reset.
For saying shit, Robin.
And, let me do a quick reset, and then we've got about 10 minutes left. Oh, my gosh, how it goes so fast. But you're listening to Drive Through HR. Our guest today is Kate Bischoff, and we are talking specifically about investigations and a new decision that came out from the National Labor Relations Board. And apropos to the conversation, I want to give a thanks to our sponsor, which is Q Inc., which is the Organization for Positive Employee Relations. Boy, if that doesn't fit, right? but diving back into this decision and sort of the, you know, it's the unintended consequences of this stuff, and you could say that about any decision. But you know, we've used the example of it's a harassment investigation and a sexual harassment investigation. And, you know, I'm in HR and I'm crossing all my T's, I'm dotting my I's, I'm doing everything right. And I am, you know, dealing with what I need to deal with. We've already talked about the, you know, people never know that. And then it's closed, but how do they know they can bring up issues with Bob again? That particular sort of scenario around harassment, around sexual harassment, and you address this in your blog post, but how does that play in this world now when Me Too and cases and instances of sexual harassment in the workplace are so visible? What's the danger, you know, we've created with this?
I think Me Too has been an amazing thing because we've talked about sexual harassment now. State legislature is taking huge actions, including lowering the standards, requiring training. And for that reason, we are combating harassment. One of the hallmarks of harassment is that the harasser isolates and makes the person feel like this is they're the only ones dealing with this. And if we say to people, you can't talk about an investigation because someone was brave enough to come talk to us in the first place, we continue to isolate and we continue to make sure people feel like they're the only ones going through this. Whereas we know, particularly from Harvey Weinstein and Cosby, is that when women started talking to each other, they discovered how many of them there were. And that allowed us to really take some distinct and harsh and, you know, desperately necessary action to make sure that it stopped. I mean, Harvey alone has over 90 women at this point in time, but the women didn't know about each other.
Right.
In fact, he used that to his advantage. He would say, you know, Gwyneth did this or, you know, Ashley did this, and so you should too. It wasn't that this is, you are the only one thinking that this is harassment. This is just the cost of, you know, getting into a movie from Harvey's perspective. But if we tell people in the investigation you can't talk about this, that you can't, you know, confide in someone else who they work with, because we're doing an investigation and because that we might not get the purest of information, that just means more people are not going to come tell us.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want that to happen. I want people to feel like they can, if they can come talk to me as an investigator, they can come talk to you as the HR person doing the investigation. I don't want people to feel that they can't come talk to us, or that they feel like can't talk to each other, because then their job is on the line. And so the value in people engaging in what I would consider, which the board, you know, takes issue with now, this concerted protected activity of looking out for each other, I think is so crucial.
Yeah. Well, and one of the thing, one of the points you made as well when you wrote about this was, you know, oh, well, you know, some investigators will argue, oh, well, we don't want employees talking to each other because they're going to get their stories straight with each other and they're going to, you know, oh, you know, they're all going to come in and, you know, it's all going to be work. They're all going to have it figured out already what this tale is they're going to weave. And you then rightfully pointed out as well, you know, if someone is a trained interviewer slash investigator, you pick up on that. They all use the exact same phrase, you know. Oh, it was 2:03 p.m. Exactly. I know. I looked at my watch, and they all say the same thing.
Right.
You know, we're equipped. We're trained. We're equipped to handle those things, which kind of brings me to a couple of wrap-up questions. In general, for workplace investigations, if someone is not utilizing a third party, and we're going to get to that in a minute, but I'm the HR professional, I'm the HR leader, I'm Sally, the HR generalist, whatever, I'm doing an investigation. What are kind of the top things to, you know, to prepare myself? Yeah. What are the top things to consider? This could go on forever.
Well, I would.
Quick.
Right. Exactly. The things I would consider as an HR person is, am I equipped to ask these questions and remain impartial? A lot of my clients hire me because I don't know anybody in the organization.
Yep.
But and I have, and they also don't want to waste their own credibility on something like that. So if it's a high level manager, they hire me because they don't want to be on the chopping block with the other guy too, right? So they bring my credibility in that works. But for an HR person, if you're going to be doing the investigation yourself, I want you to think about, one, can you do it and be impartial? Two, have you figured out the dynamics of the organization so that your investigation just isn't what she said or what he says or what she says? It's how does the team work together? And how does the team fit in the broader organization? Because those kinds of dynamics things or how they work together really do shed a light on the behavior that is occurring within that team. And so you
yeah.
don't, you know, part of the confidentiality is you don't want to out the complainant. Well, did he touch her boob? You know, touch Susie's boob. No, it's how do they interact with each other? How do, you know,
yeah.
asking those kinds of open-ended questions about what they observe, because that interaction isn't, you know, outing Susie as the complainer, but it's also trying to get the bigger picture. And that's what I think sometimes HR loses a little bit on, is we don't
yeah.
we don't step back enough to look at that bigger picture.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I think there's also danger. Maybe danger is the wrong word, but it one of the things that makes it challenging, especially if somebody's you're an HR professional in a small or mid-sized organization where you know everybody. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, you're part of the fabric of the workplace. And then you have to go in and do an investigation. And the difficulty for some, because I've seen this with people on my teams, is they have such preconceived notions before they – so it gets mm-hmm. back to that impartiality of it. An issue arises or a complaint comes in. It doesn't have to be harassment. It could be, you know – Bob's not cleaning the toilet stall after himself, whatever it is. And there's
mm-hmm.
an immediate, oh, well, I know he did it. I believe it. I'm
yeah.
sure he did it. He's a pig. I know he's the one
yep.
wiping poop on the wall. And they,
mm-hmm.
you know, they enter that investigation with, you know, it's already accomplished. They've got their story already written. And that's a real
mm-hmm.
difficulty. For a lot of HR folks that I've seen in, depending on the organization and depending upon their role, which
right.
is, you know, why it's good to
yeah,
bring
the other
third party.
Yeah, and the other thing is, like say you've got the really bad performer that the manager is constantly talking to you about, no, we got to get rid of him. He's such, you know,
yeah.
he's not doing what he's supposed to. And then that person comes and tells you that he's been bullied or been harassed or that he
yeah.
thinks his boss is engaging in illegal behavior. You know, the manager has conditioned you to believe the manager over
yeah.
the employee. And so
yeah.
being impartial in that particular spot can be really hard. I also want you as an HR person to push back on the bad performer. Like, how do you know he's a bad performer
yeah.
and not
yeah.
just rubber stamp, whatever. But that, you know, because we know the people, we have those biases and those pictures of our mind built in, and that can be a hard thing to step back and do the actual investigation in as neutral as possible.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
and I think
and it's often, yeah.
No, go ahead.
Go ahead. Well, it's often like I just did an investigation where the allegation was harassment, but what I uncovered of just super bad HR stuff, super bad management stuff was, you know, it wasn't the purpose of my investigation, but I uncovered this stuff too. And that's
mm-hmm.
important in an investigation, is to be able to hear the other things that come at you, even though the person complaining about it or bringing the report to you is not the most credible or,
mm-hmm.
you know, is, you know, trying to save his or her job. So it's that can be
mm-hmm.
really difficult too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's and without fail, I think, you know, one of my key things always with an investigation, you know, I don't want the person to think I want to engage with them, so it's a conversation when I'm interviewing that complainant
mm-hmm.
or that witness or whomever. But by God, I better take damn good notes, and you know. Make
okay.
you know, right? Make sure that I'm capturing things, you know, not like a robot that they don't think I'm engaging with them, but, you know, that's kind of a I guess, Robin's key tip as well. But we're down to about
mm-hmm.
just about a minute. So thank you so much, Kate, for being on the show. And time flew by. It's a critically important piece of what we do. So I'm so glad we got to talk about it. Before we hop off, quick, tell people where they can find you, website, Instagram, etc.
Okay, so Thrive Law Consulting, all one word, .com is the website, and that's where you can find the blog post and a bunch of other random facts about me. I am also on LinkedIn. People feel more then happy to come join me on LinkedIn. And as I mentioned, I love the Twitter. It might be my favorite. And I'm KHBISCHHRLaw.
Fantastic. Thank you so much. Thanks for listening to Drive Through HR. Have a good day, everybody. Bye.
Thank you. Bye.